As of today, about 20% of Marylanders, well, actually about 18% of Marylanders, have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. It's interesting how difficult it is to get it. I don't know if it's a sign of the age or it's just a sign of my age, but I can remember a few years ago, maybe a little more than a few years ago, I used to spend a lot of time on the telephone trying to get concert tickets to go see a band or a performer that I wanted to see. Now I spend time on the phone trying to get a vaccine. So things just seem to change. I think I'd rather get the vaccine than to go see a concert at this moment anyway. And if you are here and you've gotten your vaccine, you know, congratulations on that. And if you've got both of your vaccines by now, you might want to consider buying a lottery ticket because you seem to be one of the fortunate ones. The progress is slow, but yet there is progress being made. Restrictions are still in place. At times they diminish and then they get reinstated, and hopefully they'll be diminishing a little bit more. However, some have said that face masks, physical distancing is going to be around to at least Thanksgiving, maybe Christmas. Restaurants, gyms, grocery stores, churches have all had a reduced capacity and require, by law, cloth face masks for all those inside their buildings. Schools are greatly affected. Reduced class sizes are going to be challenging. Right now, the basic standard, the idea of per person, per square foot in a classroom right now is 36 feet per person, square feet, 36 square feet. So that means that in any of our classes that we use for Sunday school, that limits most of our classes to 4 or 5 people, including the teachers. Now, I did see one person recommending that 36 square feet is not quite enough. It has to be 144 square feet per person. Here, that would be one person per room. And the reason for the 144 is because somebody walks between you, then they're not separated by 6 feet. So you actually have 12 feet separating. Well, schools are going to have to really figure out what they're going to do. Will they have the plexiglass screens for each student, which will mean multiple cleaning each day, or will they just continue to try to separate them? Some of the special area teachers are especially be challenged because physical exertion isn't going to be permitted in physical education classes. So no running, no jumping, no playing. Art classes, everything has to be separate. You have to have your own paint, your own colors, your own everything. In the library, they're still just trying to decide if they will allow children to look at the books, because if one touches a book, then that book has to be put basically in a timeout until it's safe to be handled by somebody else. And vocal music, no singing. This makes it a little hard to teach vocal music without singing. Instrumental, maybe no playing of instruments unless somebody can invent a mask that goes on the end of a horn, right? Teachers will have to figure out how to do hybrid lessons that incorporate both on-campus and virtual learning. There's just a whole lot of going on out there. There's also these new strands that are appearing of the COVID-19 that seem to be more contagious, which is continuing to cause some to have more fear and trepidation, especially among those who are especially vulnerable. They're reluctant to venture out, especially when there's going to be a lot of people around them. And some of these people, truthfully, their isolation has taken a toll on them. Being separated for such a long time, for a whole year, has not helped them mentally, nor has it helped them physically. For others, as COVID cases drop, which in Maryland, I think for 1 week, average is under 800 per day now, which is great, and it continues to drop down. As these cases drop and as more Marylanders are vaccinated, they're going to feel that there is no need to continue these restrictions. There's no need to wear these face masks, no need to keep physical distancing, that we don't need to continue with these protocols. Because they've seen it, or have always seen it, as kind of an infringement on their personal rights. And we understand that in a country that we're about our rights. Our charter documents talks about our individual rights. We broke away from a tyrannical government that was oppressing our people and denying them their rights. So for them, these mandates are no small things. They see it as a violation of their God-ordained rights. So as Christ followers, how do we respond to this? How do we love our neighbors when emotions are frayed in this year of pandemic and politics and protests and pandemonium? How can we show people that we care about them when there is when we're in the midst of lockdowns and there's uncertainty and fear that has become a part of our culture, a part of our community? So how do we step out in this quagmire of mess and show our neighbors that we love them? Well, there's a few passages that we're going to look at today, but there's one that's going to be our focus. There's one that really kind of is the umbrella passage of how we love our neighbor, no matter what is happening, but especially in the time of pandemic. And that we know it as the golden rule, and it's found in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 7, verse 12. And these are the very words of Jesus Christ, and he says this: "So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets." It's interesting that the verse right before this, Jesus is talking about that as evil people, we know how to give good gifts. He's talking about our sinfulness, our selfishness. And here he's using that selfishness that we have, that bend, to help us understand how we should minister. He's telling us who have this bent of selfishness a way to understand how we should treat others. Actively treating others as we would want to be treated. That's simple. It's taking the focus off of ourselves and using it to focus on how we respond to those people around us, how we relate to them. Now, Jesus said that this sums up the law and the prophets. So basically what he's saying is this is the sum of the Old Testament. And he is concisely rephrasing what Leviticus 19:18 says, which is this: "Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord." Again, the assumption is that we tend to care for ourselves, that we watch out for ourselves, that we expect things for ourselves. So if these things are, if we expect things for ourselves, then we should act in accordingly to how we treat others. So what does that look like? Well, I would say that most of us want to be treated with kindness. We want to be treated with respect and dignity. We want people to love us, to value our opinion. We want them to, we like it when people speak highly of us. You know, we recognize that when we share an opinion, maybe with our spouse or with people that we work with or a neighbor, and as we're talking, they kind of go, psh, and roll their eyes. Very dismissive. We don't like that. So we should not do that. We recognize when people are unkind to us. We don't like that. So we should seek to always be kind because we know how that feels. We need to demonstrate these things. We show respect to the people that we come in contact with. We seek to treat them kindly and affirm their dignity. We seek to understand their opinion and not to be dismissive. And we need to be careful with our facial expressions, too. There's a funny little thing that's making its way on social media, and I'm not putting it down. I think it's kind of it's telling, and I kind of chuckled at it because I've been accused of this. And it says, I cannot be held responsible for what my face does when you talk. You know, and what happens when somebody's sharing something? What do we start doing? Right? We start shaking our head. We start rolling our eyes. We pucker our lips. You know, and people think, oh, he thinks I'm an idiot. And it's very dismissive. The problem with that saying is it's not true. We can be held accountable for what our face does. Jesus said in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 36 and 37, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. Every careless word. Every little flippant remark, every little, you know, head bob, every little roll of the eyes. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. The other danger about this verse is that some people kind of turn this into a karma doctrine, a karma philosophy or theology. That is, if you're kind to others, they'll be kind to you. Not what it says. If you love others, they'll love you. Nope, doesn't say that either. There is no actual idea of a reciprocal agreement by doing this. And the bottom line is, as Christ followers, we don't show respect to get respect. We don't love to be loved. In fact, there is no guarantee that if we are kind, that people will be kind to us. That if we give somebody courtesy, they will show us the same courtesy. No guarantee about that, and it doesn't really matter. That even shouldn't be a part of our dilemma or our moaning. You know, we are supposed to be a good neighbor, even to our bad neighbors. We are supposed to be kind even to those who are not kind. We are supposed to be respectful even if the person shows us no respect. We're supposed to show human dignity of a person even when they do not even think we're human. Their behavior should have no bearing on our behavior. Jesus kind of tells us about this, and he tells us why. In Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5, verse 43 and following, says, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. Now, he's talking about how the religious people were teaching in that day. He said, oh, yeah, I love your neighbor, but it's okay to hate your enemy. And Jesus said, nah, no, that's not right. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So basically, they're an enemy. They're not going to be kind to you. Love them anyway. They're persecuting you. Pray for them. So that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Now this is where it gets really close to home for us. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Big deal. You love somebody who's loving. You love your neighbor because you're a good neighbor to the good neighbor. Do not even tax collectors do the same. And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you going to do? Even the Gentiles do the same. Now it's interesting, he says Gentiles and tax collectors, because in that time period, the religious people were teaching, the worst people in the world are tax collectors. The worst people that you would never want to associate with were Gentiles. So basically what Jesus is saying is, the people that you think are the worst of the worst do this, but you're called to be different. You, therefore, must be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. We are supposed to resemble the DNA of God in our lives, the spiritual DNA within us. And we should be maturing to be more like Christ. Basically, what Jesus is saying here is that an indicator of our relationship with the Heavenly Father is by how we treat others, especially those that are not kind, that are disrespectful, that do not love us, that dismiss us. Because if we just love the ones that we love, or the ones who love us and who are kind and great, and dismiss the others, then we're no different than the world. And He has called us to be different. If we refuse to show love, respect, and dignity to those who do not show that to us, then we are basically embracing sin. And we are more the people of this world and less the people of God. And we have to think about this in the terms of why we are children of God. What was the cost of becoming the children of God, of being set apart? In John's Gospel, we read in chapter 1, verse 12 through 13, "But to all who did receive Him," talking about Jesus, "who believed in His name, He," Jesus, "gave right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God." So if we believe that Jesus is the Son of God, that He died on the cross for our sins to rescue us from this terrible existence as far as this empty way of living. And an empty way of living is only loving the ones who love you and only showing respect to the people who respect you. If we're being delivered from that, if He died on the cross for that, that His blood was shed for that, then we should demonstrate a different kind of life. If we are born into the family of God, we should look like we belong to the family of God. And our worldview needs to be different. So, as children of God, we should reflect God's presence in our lives. So, what separates God's people, Christ's followers, from the world is we are always to be respectful, kind, and loving, no matter what. Not based on some innate goodness in ourselves, it is based on that relationship that we have with God through Jesus Christ. So what does that look like in our pandemic world? Well, let's talk about this. If you go into a store, a restaurant, or a gym, some of the things that we need to recognize is that they have requirements. They are legally bound by the law to require a mask for those who are patronizing their establishments. And most of these establishments choose to enforce those rules. And there's reasons for that, especially in places like gyms and restaurants. If they don't enforce those rules, they'll get closed down. And they'll have to be closed down for a while. So they enforce the rules. We, as Christ followers, who come into their places of business, we are supposed to be respectful and honor their request. Unless there is something that is fundamentally immoral about keeping 6 feet of separation or wearing a cloth mask, then we should obey it. And let me just let you know, there isn't anything immoral about wearing a cloth mask and keeping 6 feet of distance. Now, I go to the gym 5 to 7 times a week, sometimes twice a day. I know it doesn't look like I do that. But I do. Because time and gravity are not my friend. And I like to fight that as much as I can. Now, when I go to the gym, I keep my mask on. I keep 6 feet away. I use hand sanitizer. I wipe down the equipment that I use so to make it clean before I use it, then I wipe it down again so that it's clean for somebody else. Do I like wearing the mask? Nope. Don't like wearing the mask. You get winded easier. It's harder to recover between sets. The hand sanitizer dries out my hands. The mask makes it hot. The keeping separation of 6 feet makes it difficult to talk to anybody. It is not fun. It is not good. However, as a Christian, I want to honor those that I honor and respect the establishments that I go to. Now, the reason I'm using this and some of the other things that I'm using is because of what I actually see. The people at the gym who tend to be the most stubborn and not wearing their mask are also the people who like to talk about Jesus and how that you need to know him. They're the ones that talk about that with Jesus, you don't have to live in fear. We don't have to fear the pandemic. Okay, yes, if you love Jesus, you should not have to fear the pandemic. Still, that doesn't mean you don't wear your mask when you're in a private business. So I watch. On a couple of occasions, I've heard these same folks say that I don't have to wear the mask. You are violating my rights. You cannot make me wear the mask. And then I watch them get escorted out and their membership revoked. Now, I've had conversations with a couple of these folks. And first, they just keep saying, I have a right not to wear that mask. They're infringing on my rights. And I said, well, let me just tell you something. When you walk through that door, that right disappears because this is a private business and you're supposed to show respect. It's like when people come to the door to my house and they're telling me about different religions and I do most of the talking and they say to me, well, you're not letting me talk. And I went, yeah. And they said, well, I have a right to share my opinion. I said, well, actually, that's out there on that public sidewalk. This is my house. So this is where I get to talk. If I go to your house, you get to talk. And then I asked them, how would you like somebody to come where you work and start telling you what you should do and how you should run your business? And then I point out that the people who are enforcing these rules didn't make the rules. The corporations made the rules. The government made the rules. This guy, he's making $11 an hour to tell you to wear a mask. And you're giving him a hard time? I think his life has enough burden without you adding to it. The Apostle Paul talks about this in his letter to the Corinthians, the second letter. He told them in 2 Corinthians 11 that he had a right to be paid by them because he was working for them, but he chose not to because he did not want to be a burden to them and he would not burden them, in verse 9. So even if it is right not to wear the mask, if we have that right, which is not in the club, we should yield that right because we don't want to make a person's work more burdensome. If you notice, they get enough difficulty out there. We are not called to add to that difficulty. We are to show the same courtesy and respect that we would desire at our workplace. We want to make sure that we don't like it when people add to our burden. We don't like people who come in that are kind of acting like a jerk. So we should not add to someone's burden. We certainly shouldn't be a jerk either. Then there are those who seem unduly afraid and fearful. And maybe they are going overboard on their mask. Maybe if one mask is good, two masks is better, three masks is best. So I have seen people go out in public that they have several masks on, they have the shield on, they have the stocking cap pulled down as far as they can. They have plastic paper bag, for newspaper bags on their arms and on their legs and a trash bag over them. Is that overboard? Seems overboard. Not my call, though. Not my decision. Obviously, they're afraid, aren't they? To do that, they're afraid. And do they need me to scoff at them? Nope. But I see a lot of Christians like to scoff at them. And we should not be doing that. Instead of trying to dismiss them, maybe we should try to get to understand them a little bit better, to find out why they're fearful instead of trying to shame them out of their fear. We should seek to see what's driving that fear within them. We may be able to reasonably help them if that's needed. Or they might just reject it altogether. Or something else might happen as we might go, oh, I get that now. I understand why you're so fearful. If I were in your place, I'd be fearful too. You know, our basic job isn't to judge them. It's simply to love them unconditionally and not to add to their stress. There's enough stress out there. If you read articles about the pandemic, they contradict each other all the time. It says one thing up here, and five paragraphs down, it says something completely different. Because our media doesn't really proofread what they're writing. So there's so many mixed signals that come out. Still, that's not our major concern. Our major concern is simply to love them unconditionally and not to add to their stress. The Apostle Paul said in Romans chapter 13, 10, says, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. We do no harm. We are not to do harm to the people around us. We are not to cause them to have more fear, the more stress. So instead of arguing with people about rules and laws or because of their fears, we should seek to make their lives a little better. We should seek to bless them. So how can we do that? Okay, so you're at the grocery store, or you're at the gym, or you're at a restaurant, and there's somebody there that doesn't want to wear the mask, and the person is trying to deal with this person. The employee is trying to talk to that person, trying to explain that there are rules, that you have to wear this, and they're going on and on and on, and you're watching that. One of the things that you can do is ask for to talk to the manager. And when the manager comes, says, listen, I just want you to know, I was watching your employee over here, and I just appreciate how they are enforcing the rules, even though that's a difficult job for them. It's not really what they are being paid to do so much. But I just want you to know, I am grateful that they want to keep me safe. And I appreciate that they're taking their job seriously. And I think you should know that. Do you know how many times managers get that conversation? Maybe 1 out of 100. And then make sure you tell that employee, I just talked to your manager and this is what I said. That goes a long way to take that stressful situation and to relieve some of that just by being kind. And a little icing on the cake, send an email to corporate office and tell them, give the name of the place that you were at, the address, the person that you talked to, and let them know what you thought and how much you appreciate that. So let them know that. Not doing harm, but seeking to make their lives a little easier. And for those who are in fear, maybe you can find those boundaries where you can help them to be a little less fearful. Maybe you can just say, hey, can I just come? You can stand on your porch and I'll stand about 30 feet away and we'll talk. Now, some people, they don't even want to do that because they're just afraid. Another way that you can do it is maybe say, listen, I'll come to your house. Don't open your windows. Just stand at the window. We'll talk on the phone and we'll talk to each other. At least there's some sort of physical presence. Maybe it's just taking a meal over to them, but telling them, I'm going to follow as much health protocols as I can. I'll wear gloves, I'll wear a mask. When I drive it over, I'll wear a mask, I'll wear gloves. That's another thing. Sometimes you see people alone in a car, and you know, we might go, oh, they're wearing a mask alone. Well, they might be delivering food. We don't know. We don't know what's in that car. And let them know. You'll leave it at the doorstep. You'll get in the car before they even open the door. Write them notes. Send them texts that affirm them. do in a way that helps them not feel more afraid or ashamed of their fear. If we get creative enough, I mean, after a year, we should be able to figure some of this out. But I think after a year, as emotions are frayed, people are kind of stir crazy from all the lockdowns, we need to step up as Christ followers and start speaking kindness and respect and love into all of this. Because what Jesus told us is whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also for them. Because this is the law and the prophets.